time now for us to head to the hotline as we bring in Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood insider. Michael, as always, we certainly appreciate you giving us some of your time. How are you this afternoon?
Doing well. Happy to talk to you guys again.
Well, I want to see if you've picked yourself up off the floor after seeing that Good Boys was number one at the box office this weekend. It was a bit of a shock to me, and I didn't realize it had been a few years since an R-rated comedy had won a weekend at the box office. Did anybody see this coming?
You know, I don't know if anyone did. It's kind of a surprising pick, but again, it was kind of a quiet weekend at the box office in general, so it really had some opportune timing. Like you said, it's the first R-rated movie to top the box office since 2016 when The Boss with Melissa McCarthy was at the top of the box office. So it's been a long time since we've had someone had an R-rated comedy up there. It's also the highest grossing first weekend for a comedy all year. So a lot of big things going on for this movie. I think that it helps, like I said, to have kind of a quiet weekend. Its competitions really were Blinded by the Light, which did pretty well on some, you know, smaller distribution, as well as Hobbs and Shaw, which is finally seeing its numbers kind of taper off, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is still doing pretty well. But yeah, overall, I think it's a big surprise. It certainly caps off a great summer for Seth Rogen, who had good reviews in The Long Shot with Charlize Theron earlier in the summer, then did very well with The Lion King, and now this that he produced. So, yeah, I think a big surprise, but, you know, really benefited from good timing.
Seth Rogen was fantastic. Or at least his voice was fantastic in The Lion King. Yeah, it was very good. He was very good. I thought that was very, very well done. But this movie has a lot of intrigue. And, you know, I think people look at this in a lot of different ways. Matt brought up the point in our opening segment today that at least the idea was trotted out there. You know, should kids this young be in movies like this? I mean, I'm awfully intrigued by this movie. I think the previews have looked absolutely hysterical. The one thing, of course, you worry about is that maybe the previews give you a little bit too much of the movie. Have you had the chance to see Good Boys yet? Do you think it exposes more of that?
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but that's certainly become a bigger and bigger problem over the last several years. In trailers, not just for movies, but we've seen it with a lot of TV shows as well. Netflix has practically given away the endings to some of their romantic comedies they have. So that's certainly become a bigger problem, just as studios are trying to get people to watch however they can and really just rope them in, even if that means showing all the best parts. But I don't know. I've heard really good things for the most part. I've heard if you're into kind of that raunchier humor, then it's perfect for you. If you know that you're going to see an R-rated comedy about young kid getting in trouble, this is the movie for you. If you're expecting something a little more wholesome, obviously you're not going to find that there.
This kind of brings that nostalgia aspect to it. I mean, we all remember a time when we were kind of on that verge of understanding some things but not others, and I think it kind of plays off that. At least that's how it appears in the trailer for it.
Yeah, and I think it's been a long time since we've seen a movie that features kids just being, sure, you know, like kids are, and swearing and getting into trouble and all of that. Now we sort of have a divide where you don't really have movies like The Goonies where these kids are swearing and cursing and running around in their adventures. You kind of have just more delineated family fare versus action and comedy fare. So it's kind of nice to get the whole package here, and it's certainly one that I'm looking forward to seeing as soon as I can.
We're speaking with Michael Warschauer, our Hollywood insider here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, last night, you know, a lot of people were interacting on social media about this. It was the Patrick Swayze documentary on Paramount, I Am Patrick Swayze. It debuted last night. Your thoughts on what you've heard about this? I didn't hear much negative come out of this.
No, absolutely not. I've heard a lot of great things. Really what I've heard is that, if you're a Patrick Swayze fan, this is going to make you cry. And if you're just sort of a casual fan or don't really know much about him, you're still going to probably get pretty emotional and really come out of it with a deeper appreciation for him. He's someone who, when he died, you read just these sort of glowing stories about him, that he was just really beloved throughout all of Hollywood. No one had a bad thing to say. And from what I understand, there's some pretty great stories in there about him really kind of overcoming the odds to get to where he was and eventually becoming this, you know, iconic figure. But one of the stories I heard that I really enjoyed and that I'm going to have to watch the whole thing now to get the whole story is that his Dirty Dancing co-star Jennifer Grey was initially really opposed to doing the movie with him because the two of them had done Red and Dawn together. And in the filming of it, he and some other actors pranked her by putting firecrackers outside of her trailer. So it took a while for him to win her over and prove that he wasn't going to be a jerk to her on set. And obviously they ended up with great chemistry and a pretty iconic pairing in that movie. But certainly a lot to look forward to in this documentary, one that I'm going to have to go find myself to watch.
You think he's more known for his role in Dirty Dancing, Ghost, or do you think he's best known for his role I had the title on the tip of my tongue and I forgot the bouncer.
Roadhouse,
that's it.
I don't know. I think that depends on who you're asking more than anything else. I think it'll say a lot about what kind of a movie fan you're talking to. But I think that Dirty Dancing is probably the role that has had the biggest sort of cultural impact still. That movie you can still find on reruns pretty much any weekend throughout the summer, if not more. So I think that's probably the one that has remained certainly the most present in pop culture. But like I said, there's a lot of great movies of his that, you know, you'll get different people telling you which ones they recognize him from based on their own personal taste, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, when you stop and think about it, it's hard to find someone who's been in more classic movies. I mean, you mentioned Red Dawn. I get it's not like an Oscar-winning movie, but everyone knows that. Everyone, you shout Wolverines, and everyone knows exactly what you're talking about. I mean, he has a pretty great career, I would have to think. It's second to none, almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, I remember when he passed away, like the impact that he had was just very present in all of the way people were talking about him. And so I think that his legacy is helped by the fact that he was such like a nice guy and was really beloved by his peers. So they've sort of continued to reference his work in their own and that sort of thing. But yeah, I mean, just certainly a cultural icon and one that I think we are going to learn much, much more about through documentaries like these and through these stories that have come out since he died.
The more important question is this. You know, we can throw titles like Roadhouse out there and Ghost and Dirty Dancing.
But I know where you're going, but the fact is,
Who could forget when he played in that SNL skit with King Farley in the Chippendale sketch? I mean, I almost feel like that gets more play than anything else, doesn't it?
That's true, and that's actually the first image that comes to my head when I think of Patrick Swayze. I mean, this is a guy who really, could do everything, and that was certainly one of the more iconic SNL moments, and certainly one that has a lot more impact knowing that both of those guys are gone now. But, absolutely. I mean, that guy could do everything. He could do comedy, he could dance, he could be the tough guy in the action movie, romantic comedies. It's hard not to see why his legacy is endured so strongly.
Yeah, that's part of the allure to it, though. There's really only two guys who could have done that in that skit, and one because he has to be humble, and he's Patrick Swayze. I mean, that guy doesn't have to be humble, but you believe it. And Chris Farley, because he's actually a pretty decent dancer in that, but he's the big fat guy. It just worked out great.
Adrian and Barney. Yeah. Adrian and Barney. Kevin Nealon had a very underrated
right.
role in that as one of the Chippendale judges as well.
That's right.
I mean, the whole skit just came together so well. It's comedy gold even 20-some-odd years later. Just terrific stuff. All righty. Well, I've got to ask you about this. USA Today had a story today stating that Netflix's Diagnosis should be our next big obsessive binge. Are they right? Have you read any good reviews about this?
I think that they are probably right, that it is certainly one of those big obsessive binges. And it's one that I think is really unique. Basically, the show is they have these patients, this real-life patients, it's a reality show, that have incurable diseases or have some sort of a condition that doctors can't figure out. And basically, they're crowdsourcing the diagnoses through these series. So you have actual people watching them and trying to figure out what's wrong with these patients and save their lives. And TNT has a similar show, but this one seems, you know, like it has like the that certain Netflix touch of being very, very bingeable. I saw one review made sure to mention that they show you a preview of what's going to happen in the next case before you finish the episode. So it's just really addictive to keep watching. But I think it's one of the more interesting new trends in reality TV to have these sort of crowdsourced and open-ended shows that aren't just like pick who's going on to the next round, but actually have some real-world consequences. So certainly one that I think I'm going to be checking out. And if you're into medical shows like House or anything like that where they're solving medical mysteries, this is certainly for you. And in fact, the woman who created it, it was actually a consultant on House as their medical consultant during its run. So I think it's going to be an interesting one to see.
All right. I've been dying to ask you about this because I've been reading about this show for quite some time, debuted on HBO yesterday, called The Righteous Gemstones. Danny McBride is involved, and that can only mean very, very good things. It also involves one of my all-time favorites in John Goodman. I'm excited. What kinds of things are you hearing about The Righteous Gemstones?
The Righteous Gemstones is pretty funny. It really follows in the tradition of Danny McBride's last two TV shows, the legendary Eastbound and Down, and then Vice Principals, which just wrapped up about a year or two ago. It's very funny. I mean, you add John Goodman and Danny McBride and throw in Adam Devine and a great supporting cast, and it's really funny. It's about this sort of corrupt Southern religious family that they should be raising all of this money for their church to do good, and instead are just bickering with each other and spending it like the rich jerks that they are. And it really follows in the tradition of, like I said, his other two shows of just that really blunt comedy. Danny McBride is, as always, hilarious. And I think that if you know Danny McBride and those two shows, you're going to love this. I will say that I did watch the pilot last night, and it's great. It's very funny. It's not quite, at least at this early stage, at the same level as Eastbound and Down or Vice Principals, but very much worth your time if you are a Danny McBride fan, if you're an Eastbound and Down fan. Definitely should check it out.
Okay, I've got to ask you this. Just because when it comes to Eastbound and Down, and I never saw Vice Principals, so I don't know if that follows the same formula here, but if you've ever seen Eastbound and Down, the one common criticism of that show was that the first season was so incredibly awesome that the rest of those seasons could never live up to the greatness that was season one. Do you think that when they went to the drawing board here with this, they had that in mind, that they wanted to make season one very good, but they wanted to make it a series where the entire series was great, not just that first season?
I think so. I think that part of with Eastbound and Down and then Vice Principals as well is you kind of had the story heading toward the logical conclusion, and they kind of just had to keep shifting that conclusion to keep the series going. Like, the first season of Eastbound and Down, the question is Kenny Powers going to, you know, become Kenny Powers again, or is he going to just suffer embarrassment in his hometown and all of this? And, as that show got on, they had to shift the focus of him, whether he was leaving to go play baseball in Mexico or whatever it was. They had to kind of change it, so it lost its kind of original flair. I think this series is sort of built to maybe last a little bit longer and not just sort of be going toward the sort of end goal of redemption or not, but really sort of be a portrait of this family. So I think it might have a little bit better staying power, but that remains to be seen. It's tough to judge that after just one episode.
Well, with Adam Devine and John Goodman, I mean, doesn't it kind of give you the ability to change the focus to someone else if you so choose?
Oh, absolutely. And that duo or trio right there is just like perfect for this. They all can go over the top and really just like when I saw this casting of the three of them as a father and two sons, it was just perfect. So I think they just have like a big, deep well of stories and comedy that they can go with on this show. So I'm really excited to see what direction they go in. Hopefully they can use the three of them to their maximum potential, I guess.
Boy, I hope that HBO thing's still going on, that free trial. Did it last? Did it? It went until yesterday, you said?
I think so.
Man, so I missed out.
Might still be going on.
All right, because I've got to check this out, man. That's a cast I'm just dying to see. That movie, or that I should say that series looks fantastic. All right, Michael, before we cut you loose, my friend, we need this week's picks to click.
Sure. Well, it is kind of the dog days of summer, and we're right before Labor Day, so even the streaming services are a little quiet on new stuff this week. But if you haven't checked it out already, there's Mindy Kaling's adaptation of Four Weddings and a Funeral on Hulu. It's not quite as good as the original movie, but it certainly has a lot of charm to it. And if you're a Mindy Kaling fan, you'll notice a lot of her trademarks and sort of frequently used humor. So I would check that out. And the other thing, it's a movie that's been out for a little while, but it's just hitting both Amazon and Hulu this week. Mission Impossible Fallout, one of my favorite action movies of the last few years. This whole franchise is awesome, and it has one of the best live action stunts I've seen in the last several years. This whole scene where Tom Cruise is parachuting down from skydiving down from a very high altitude. It's all real, and it's very cool. So check that out while you're waiting for all the new stuff to drop over Labor Day weekend.
Great stuff. Michael, we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you then.
Thank you, Michael. Again, Michael Warshaw, our Hollywood insider, joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon.